This is episode 52 of the Slide In Podcast. Pretty cool. We've been doing this for a year. Today's show is brought to you by the Kelly Inn, which resides in West Yellowstone, just a few hundred feet from the National Park's entrance. While they're open year-round, the shoulder seasons, April, May, September, October, even November, a perfect time to visit. The Madison inside the park is now open year-round, which means you can fish streamers at dawn and then be back in time for a hearty hot breakfast with the family. One of the best parts about the shoulder seasons is being able to explore the park while the crowds are light and the animals are active. The streamer bite tends to be more consistent during these months as well. The famous Bob Jacklin casting pond sits right next door, and there are plenty of ground floor rooms so you can walk straight in with your fly rod after a long day on the water.
Sorry.
Kelly's talking. when you're ready to relax, unwind in the indoor pool and hot tub. Book your trip today at www.yellowstonekellyinn.com. Use promo code SLIDE2025 for 15% off your stay. The Kelly Inn, family-friendly comfort, and world-class fishing all in one spot. Thanks to our sponsor, the Kelly Inn. Once again, SLIDE2025, kellyinn.com. West Yellowstone, YellowstoneKellyInn.com, slide2025. All right, enjoy the show.
Yes.
Groovy.
You guys have really nice hair. I still got a mullet. Not as good as Chuck's, but you guys are well-groomed.
I just got back from Tanya's.
Interesting.
3 days ago.
3 days ago? How often do you get a haircut?
That was about 3 months on that one. I give myself haircuts twice before I go get one.
Do you have a flubby?
I'd try it if I had one.
It sucks and it cuts. You probably don't know what a Flobee is.
No idea.
It was a
vacuum cleaner with a blade in it.
Yeah.
You set the height of the thing.
It was like in Wayne's World.
Damn, there's some rocks.
It's sucking my will to live. But it's actually modeled after the Flobee.
We're going to keep all this in. All right. Welcome back to a very special episode of the Slide In Podcast. I'm Braden Anderson. That's Kelly Gallup. And we have a guest with us today.
The Beaver.
Johnny Beaver McClure is joining us for our very special 52nd episode. It means we've been doing these for a year now. Or I guess this is...
It only seems like 10.
Oh. We should get you a little cupcake with the candle.
Yeah, I think.
Number one.
One.
Isn't that your nickname?
You're number one.
Cupcake?
Cupcake. Little pony.
Yeah. Anyway, happy birthday. Cheers.
Yeah.
Welcome. So, happy to be here.
Thanks to all of our listeners. Really fun to have been doing this for a year now.
For who?
For our listeners, I think. Not for Kelly. I sometimes enjoy it, but I don't know. He berates me a lot. So I guess with that, we will quit the sappy shit and jump into it. Want to start because we've got such a interesting guest on. Funny. I'll go with funny and interesting. Johnny and I were talking a little bit about some stuff we get into before we sat down, so I'm going to kind of unceremoniously prompt you into some stories here. So
we starting out like that? I thought we were gonna
we're gonna just jump it right into it. So I wanted to hear the tipping story. You told me about 10 words of it, and then
I don't know, you were saying like, do you have any funny guide stories? And that's a really common question, like, hey, you know, you're in the boat with all these random people all the time, like, do you have any funny stories? I really don't. I mean, a lot of it's just like, all right, stop talking, fish. Like, it can be a little intense for a lot of people. But I don't know. I have a couple of really funny...
You mean like on the show when you started talking about the horizontal line and nobody understood what the hell it was?
Cover that.
Are we going to cover that?
So let's jump into that because there's a background. I'll explain the background. So we posted a video on Instagram. We were on the big hole fishing squalas, and we're coming up to this nice run, and there's a couple rocks that were a little higher.
One thing to be certain, just for... more. When Johnny's talking, it's usually 98% bullshit.
Correct.
Yes.
And he likes to just keep talking until somebody figures out that it's bullshit.
That's the first thing that my mother-in-law got for an impression when Rose's mom was here. And I talked with her for about 5 minutes and walked away. Apparently, she just turned to her and goes, that John, he's a kind of a bullshitter, huh? Like, I'm a smart ass.
But, like, Johnny likes to call the shop as somebody else and... create havoc and shit.
Car ID is not as much fun anymore.
So anyway,
so
here we are on the river.
So we're on the river.
One of Johnny's things.
Johnny's rowing, and
we're coming up on a giant gravel bar, and there's no way to get down it. So we hit the rocks, and I was like, "Well, that's great." And I always make some sort of sarcastic call out, be like, "Stealth is key here." You know, got to make if any time I hit rocks like that, and because it's unavoidable. There are times where it's worth to like get out of the boat, walk it down. Like there's a couple of runs on other rivers where I do that. the big hole is the giant riffle. It's a spring. It's cloudy.
And finish your thought.
No, so that
dumbass
skirt. So basically, in this clip, we hit the rocks, and then Johnny and Kelly are just like kind of goofing around, going back and forth about like, oh, they'll never hear us coming. Yeah. Well, I heard they've got this.
Now Johnny said they can't hear a thing.
Oh yeah, they can't hear.
They don't have ears.
He says they don't have ears.
They don't have ears. And then they've got a horizontal line. No, it's a vertical line. Oh, it's diagonal. Oh, it's the circumference.
So it's diagonal. That way they can see dead people.
Yeah. So it's just like. It's a total fucking joke.
When you bang up against rocks 20 feet from them, they can't hear you. They don't have ears. No idea we're here.
None. Ignorant creatures.
They have that vertical line, I've been told, or diagonal line.
I think it's a
means you can see dead people.
It's a joke.
How many people wrote in?
There were more than one. This is ridiculous.
That's not true. They can hear.
It was a lot of actually. Like, actually they can. It's called a...
Oh, my God.
It's a horizontal line. Yeah, there's a lot of well actually guys on the comments on that one who like... Well, and Johnny texted me being like...
There's more than one person. I don't get it. Yeah.
They don't.
Sarcastic. I'm sarcastic. I'm sorry. It offends people.
He said they can see dead people.
It means that they can see dead people.
It's a joke. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you could too if you had a horizontal line.
Yeah. Or a circumference. And my favorite part of that too, it just made me laugh. I watched it. I mean, obviously I was editing it, so I had to watch it a lot, but every time you say it means they can see dead people, and then you just do this really loud nose breath.
heavy breathing in the subtitles. There were a lot of people that got it. There was one guy's like, "Man, this joke went way over your head," and all that. But I don't know.
Yeah, there were a few people that had rebuttals.
Most people thought it was funny.
Yeah,
but like just that there was more than one person that didn't get it was really funny.
Oh, there were a lot more than one.
That's my point. Yeah. Is there shouldn't have been more than one.
Usually, there's somebody that jumps.
I think sometimes we take ourselves a little too seriously.
Saying a dumb thing. Right?
Yeah. That's the army. Yeah, that's the army.
Those are the boys. Are you this stupid?
Yeah.
But we take it.
I watch it almost daily with him and one of the guides or somebody when he goes on one of these rants and leaves. Like, what was that?
Kelly and I spent a lot of time in the boat together. And after, like, I don't know, so many years, you just kind of have to make shit up because there's nothing else to talk about. We know everything else about each other.
So. Oh, it gets boring watching me catch all the fish.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times I've, like, been in a conversation with Johnny and then about a minute in, I'm like, wait a minute.
And there was just, no conversation whatsoever.
You were just lying through your teeth about something. Yeah. And then you start smiling and you try not to. It's hysterical. So.
Yeah. But getting back to it, like, with stories, I really don't have many. Like, a lot of it's just like fishing or fish stories, but once in a while, some stuff happens that's really funny. So like, and actually two of them, I don't know, my favorite one with the tipping was one of my favorites. And like I said, I don't care about, I mean, tipping is very nice. It's not mandatory, whatever people think that is appropriate. That's really nice of you. I'm not thinking about that at all. I like to just go fishing.
Tipping. I thought you were going to cow tipping.
That would be fun.
I was waiting for this funny story.
We should have done that for the 1 year anniversary.
Just do cows.
Yeah, go out and tip cows. People would like to watch that. But
I've tried it. It doesn't work.
Yeah. Well,
you bounce off the sumbitch.
That's awesome. The fact that one of us has tried
1,100 pounds. Are you shitting me? Even you aren't going to knock it over.
And well, you know.
Everybody's told me they've done this 100 times. But we've all tried it.
It's like in Tommy Boy. And
100,000
people. They fall over.
There's a bunch of guys going to write in and says, you just don't know how to hit them. A bunch of Nebraska guys are going to say, you know, you're a moron. I did it once. I only tried it once, but it didn't tip over on me.
Yeah.
Maybe pick too big of a cow.
I would have been pulling it, but I hit it pretty good.
Hmm? Yeah,
but so you picked too big of a cow.
That's
the first time he's done that, huh? Come on.
What did you say about Mel?
No, that was not about Mel.
What?
That was not about Mel. Mel, sorry, baby.
Go ahead. Anywho, not about cow tipping, but there was a guy, this was like my second or third year when I was starting, so I was on the bottom of the list, and I was working the shop most of the time, and I was maybe guiding 3 days a week, and I dropped my folks off in the parking lot, and I heard, John, a word. and it was this man who had come in a couple weeks earlier. He was in a trailer, and I'm not sure. Boy, I forget. Well, I wouldn't name his name, but he beckoned me over, and I was like, "What's going on, man?" And he said, "Well, John, I've been talking to some of your clientele after they're going out with you, and they seem to be having quite a bit of fun out there and catching some fish, and I'd like to hire you for a day of your services." I said, "Sure, man. I'm in the shop tomorrow, but I think I've got a Friday open. If you want to go book it, that's great. If not, no big deal. We can do it another time." So anyway, left for fishing and came back in the morning. My name was on the calendar. Kelly had booked the trip. And so I went to his place to set up a meeting time. We always kind of talk to people the night before. And he was there and he goes, "John, what time will you be picking me up tomorrow? I'm so excited." And I was like, "How about 6 a.m.?" He goes, "That won't work." And I said, "Okay. How about 10:30? And he goes, "Well, I didn't know you were going to be out drinking all night and partying." And I was like, "I offered 6 a.m. first. He goes, "How about 8? And I said, "I'm not an 8 o'clock guy. That's generally the most busy time at a boat ramp. I'd rather get in front of everybody or get behind everybody." So he goes, "Well, 10:30 will work then." So next day I pick him up at 10:30. Tons of cars at Lyons, but there's really nobody there. Everybody's usually putting in between 7:30 and 8:30 or 9. So we get in there, and he's actually really well dressed. Probably the best dressed person I've ever picked up. He had a pair of khakis on, a really nice shirt, and he had a notepad with two pens. Really nice pens.
Oh, that's a signal.
Yeah. So we got the rod out and everything, and I got him over into the boat. There's nobody there, and parked the car and hopped in the boat. And I was like, "All right, well, we're going to start with some dry flies today and, you know, see how it goes. And if not, we could always nymph him up. You ready to run?" He goes, "Yes, but there's a couple of things I'd like to discuss with you before we go." And I said, "Sure, what do you got?" And he goes, "Well, for one, I suppose you'll be expecting a rather sizable tip at the end of the day." And I was like, "You know, man, it's the least of my concerns. Let's just go fishing." He goes, "I'm not finished." I said, "All right, what do you got?" And he goes, "Well, I'm going to start
here." Oh, now I remember this guy.
"At $50. And every time you do something right, I'm going to add $10. But every time you do something wrong, I'm going to subtract $10. And I just start laughing. I was like, "Oh man, I'm screwed. I'm probably going to be in this day owing you money." He goes, "Well, that's the deal." And I was like, "All right, well, again, none of my concerns. Let's just go fishing." So I did the same thing I did for 20 years, is pulled out my can of Skull and packed a big old lip. And he looks at me and he goes, "Oh, you chew." Takes out his notebook, flicks his pen, and like looks over his glasses, and he goes, "Minus $10. I was just like this. And I started going, and I've told that story to so many guys. They're like, "Dude, I would put my fucking boat on the trailer that quick and be like, you know what, why don't you keep the other 40? I'm gonna go fishing." That was definitely one of my favorites.
I forget that guy.
And so none of this was a bit by him at all. He's completely serious.
No, he was dead serious.
Is he just a lunatic? I mean, what kind of person?
No, just very proper.
I don't know. I mean, you get to meet a lot of different people.
That's an interesting cab.
You know, and it's a very common question. How'd you end up? I don't remember. I really don't. I don't remember.
You're in the plus, but I don't.
Yeah.
He had comments also. Remember in his book? Yeah. He had comments.
Did he give things to that you?
Were possibly like self-help things. Maybe you shouldn't chew on the river.
Yeah. You know, it was like, back in the day, people did chew on the river, and now it's like every kid that you see has got a can. It's like, oh.
Full of Zins.
Zins, yeah. What was that? Like, we were talking with that about Andrew, and Scotty and I were talking, like, "Yeah, I remember back in the day we used to sit around the campfire and pour a cap full of Jack in the chew, you know?" Mm-hmm. And then Andrew was like, "Yeah, you know, sometimes we like to take some white monsters and, you know, put it in with our Zen." And at that time, I knew that the generation had changed.
Sorry, there's no hope.
Yeah, there's no hope. White monster soaked Zen.
Andrew notoriously has the greatest diet anybody has ever seen.
We can't really talk about it. It'll kill him one day. You cannot live on processed foods and energy drinks for long without paying for it. But that's another story.
It's White Monster and packaged muffins. That's yes. Basically.
You basically get to a point in your life where you change that or you don't. But this is not a diet podcast.
It could be. You know? Maybe it'll change.
Diet podcast. Show everybody my daily routine.
I have been thinking about doing like a life episode at some point. Or just random.
Nobody cares.
Yeah, but save that.
Nobody cares about
save that from
me.
The girl show.
Yeah. I want to hear Kelly or you talk about it. Nobody cares about
nobody
my
cares
life
about,
advice.
And nobody cares about our. What are your
we get
habits?
Emails about that. Are, I don't know. I think habits? It might be interesting. I don't know. Jesus. Maybe I'm full of shit, but no. I think it might be interesting.
No.
Well, that was a great story. Thanks for sharing.
I completely forgot about that guy.
The only other
I can
one
see his shirt.
The only other story that's as good as the one with at Chuck's trip with Valley Garden. And that was it.
Tell that one.
With Darren.
Oh, yes.
Is that appropriate?
No, I don't know about it.
Yeah. You tell me. I can cut it if it goes bad.
It's not really.
It's not really. It's just a find.
I think we said worse things.
Go ahead.
All right. I got the green light. Well, there is a very good customer of ours. His name is Chuck Jeffries.
We've brought Chuck up before.
We have brought Chuck up before. Chuck, if you're listening, say hi.
To Jane.
Hi, Jane.
Yeah. Anyway, Chuck brings out a great group of guys. He owned a concrete asphalt company Kansas Asphalt. And he brings out a great group of guys every year. We take them fishing for 3 days. There may be some alcohol involved. A little bit. Not much, though.
Just a little.
Yeah. But anyway, I had... So I took Darren. I think it was the first time I ever fished with Darren. And everybody was going high. So I was like, oh, we'll go low and get away from everybody. So we went Barney to Valley Garden. Had a great day. Caught a ton of nice fish. And we hit like 3 runs at Valley Garden. If you don't know, in Madison, there's a walkway section where we are, but there's also one down by Ennis from the bridge down to Ennis Lake. And then the last takeout before you hit the lake is Valley Garden. So we get down there, put the boat on the trailer, and there's a campground there. And, you know, with every boat ramp, this happens a lot. I was putting the strap on the boat. This is before the belt buckle days. See this guy out of the corner of my eye. And he is kind of sauntering up toward the boat. And people are always asking about how efficient it was or whatever. So I look up and I said, hey, how's it going? He goes, my name is, I'll hide the name just in case, I doubt that guy is watching this or listening to this. Let's see. My name is Bill. I'm from Maine. I was wondering if any of you two young fellows, I can't do a Maine accent, so I'm not going to try. Could tell me what, and he reaches into his pocket and he pulls out and he goes, this object is, or what it might be used for. And I'm just looking at the guy and he goes, I go, you know, sir, that's a mystery on me. Can't say I know. And he's like, and what about you, young fella? Looking at Darren, I look over at Darren, he's just kind of biting his lip, shaking his head, and puts it back in his pocket. And he's wearing a yellow tank top and jean shorts. He's probably 75, 70, somewhere in there.
That's a.
And he goes, well, I guess the mystery will continue. I'll just put it in my collection of river treasures back home and go about my day. You guys have an excellent rest of your day. And he goes down like the side channel. I'm pretty sure there was grandkids or a wife. And he's, you know, going down toward the picnic table. And I'm like, I can't even look at Darren. And I'm like... He gets out of sight. I look at Darren. Darren looks at me, and he just starts laughing. I go, that was a butt plug. He just goes, yep, that was a butt plug. And I get into the car, and so
it's
we're talking.
Mantle right
yeah,
now.
We're talking about it. We're envisioning like this old, beautiful like log cabin back in Maine with like old Copenhagen tins and like, maybe
Bob's bait can.
Yeah, and sea glass, and then this mystery object from Montana that's an old, dirty butt plug. Only thing I wish I would have seized the moment with is that I could have really gotten them. What I should have said was, oh my God, I can't believe you found it. That belongs to Kelly Gallup. It's his good luck fishing charm, and he can't fish without it. I'm sure he'll pay you handsomely to try it down there.
I don't know how he got by without it.
Look what I found. Oh yeah, that one's a unique one.
Yeah, I don't so think that.
I don't think. Yeah, he's not watching. This was like 12, 13.
It's amazing years. How many sexual paraphernalia you find at those landings.
I've brought this up.
And to syringes, but that one's not so cool. But
not so much.
There's a lot of weird shit you find there.
Yeah, who was it? Was it Hunter and Andrew who found that backpack?
Yeah, that's weird. Yeah, there was like a bunch of underwear and either way. There's some weird people out there. They tend to live in a van down by the river. So, yeah. But no, that one, people were like, do you think he was like, you know, getting off on it or like being weird with it? And I said, no, I think it was genuinely.
No, yeah.
He was really inquisitive about it. Yeah, I don't really have anything even close to that.
No, that's kind
of. The rest of it's just like, yeah, I'm going fishing. But I'll probably go the rest of my life / career without seeing something like that.
Hopefully.
You probably got some weird ones.
Not really.
No? Mm-mm. All that time? Never saw anything weird on the river? Maybe a werewolf? Mm-hmm. Like, throwing a boat one day?
What about,
Hex Hatch.
Wasn't... I can cut this if you guys don't want to talk about it, but when we were floating on the big hole...
You say that every time. You never cut the shit.
Yeah, but
you do not cut it. Unless it's for yourself.
Mel says it all the time. He said he was going to cut that and he didn't.
Yeah, no, but
he thinks it's funny.
It's a joke. I think it's really funny. It's really, don't worry.
I'm going to cut it.
Don't worry. Leave it. I think that's funny. Now, if I can redact the name of the river if we need to, but we were floating the big hole and weren't you guys talking about running up on some couple that was copulating in the woods?
That was on the bear trap.
No, I did it on the bighorn.
On the bighorn.
In a jet sled.
Got it.
That was, but I was wade fishing, way down by Two Leggins. And I've never, way back when nobody was down there ever.
Yeah.
And that's 20, maybe more, 25, maybe more years. I don't know if I was out here or not, but, and I heard the jet sled, but then it disappeared. And there's this one big bend that has like, five channels that go through it. It's this long peninsula and they all go through. So if you, I mean, it takes me an hour to go up and down nymph and all those or dry fly or whatever I was doing. And I went to the second one. I came around the front and I was going down in the front of this bright red jet sled. And the guy goes, hey, how you doing? Nobody quit. And this is, hey, not as good as you. Turned around, went back. And sorry for the interruption. No problem.
I thought
slowed down. Nobody did.
I thought something happened with that, with the being on the bear trap too. Something like that.
I had the chick naked that became Andy Sabota and Jim and I came around the corner
with Sam.
Sam. Well, they're behind and Sam Todd, and Bill.
And Todd.
Was Todd there?
Yeah, Todd Sampson was rowing with. I was in the shop. I was the only guy running the shop that day because you guys all went.
Well, that was a guy. There's that big parking lot, and you know where everybody at Warm Springs.
Yeah.
And there's a guy standing with this big towel like this, and one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen in my life is on the other side of it, getting naked to change her clothes. We're 35 feet from her, floating down a 13-foot blue raft.
So he's blocking her from the
everybody
lot.
Behind, not from the bend on the river. And what do you do? It was great. She was a gorgeous woman.
Yeah. To be fair,
she saw us, she just goes,
can't win.
Didn't slow down. Yeah. Same thing. Good sport. You know? Yeah.
Not a lot of people put in on the bear trap. There's only one guy who can guide it. His name is JT France. And also, there's three, four.
He's got lots of guys that guide it.
Yeah, I know. But how many boats go down the bear trap on a daily basis?
Guide boats? Probably
not. No, I mean, not that. Just boats in general. Not
hardly
many.
Any.
Yeah.
Hardly anybody floats.
So, yeah, you got the, like, one window where a boat goes down. I mean, on an average day, maybe one or two boats go down there.
Maybe.
There's some good rapids in there. Either way, you do see some weird stuff.
It was pretty.
Yeah.
I did have a dozen chicks on the sand dune once on the Big Manistee with a preacher.
See, it's coming back.
Everybody's naked. Everybody's naked.
With a preacher. Interesting.
Gotcha. Yes.
So
he was a fun guy.
You remember when you texted me last week to change the name of the podcast or the spelling of Vice?
That was yesterday.
Was it really?
We were fishing yesterday.
That was yesterday.
We were filming yesterday.
No.
Yeah.
It was Tuesday because it comes out on Tuesdays. And today's Thursday, so it's 2 days ago.
Yeah, but you said last week.
Oh,
so
whatever.
I'm closer. It's 2 days ago.
I'd agree to disagree.
Remember last week? Yeah, 2 days ago. It's all a blur.
Yeah, well, this podcast is going to be all about... Never mind.
No, don't.
Yeah, I tried to make a joke with the name of the last podcast, and Johnny...
Well, you said like, yeah, the original name was Vice, and like, what's Kelly's Vice, V-I-C-E, as opposed to S, but he said he did it on purpose.
He said, what it's keeps really, Kelly coming back to
not,
the Vice?
It's not really important.
it was my own little joke, just something to entertain myself. All right, so we're going to take a quick break from the show here to make an announcement. We are hiring at the Slide-In. Johnny, you want to jump in here?
Oh, yeah, we are hiring this year. We are looking for some people to work at Slide In. If you're interested, send us a resume, just a little bit why you would like to work at such a place. Must like fishing, because there's really not much else to do here.
There's a rule about here when you work here.
Oh, I put that in there.
You put it in?
If you don't like fishing, if it's not of a hobby, you're not going to like it, and you're going to probably have to sleep next to Kyler, and he'll talk about fishing in his sleep, so...
But you have to fish four nights a week. You have to fish four times.
We should be begging you not to take a night off to do laundry.
Yes.
Because you smell so bad because you fish every day.
That was you,
That's
Danny.
More, yeah, I know.
That was you.
Or you have feathers in your hair. But either way, we're looking for somebody. If you're interested, next year season is basically May through October. Send us a resume to slidein@slidein.com, and we'll get a hold of you. Also, we are looking for some people who are interested working at the Ennis location next year, both full and part-time. Do not have housing down there. That's an issue. But if you can find housing in town, you want to work for the North Slide, we're also taking resumes down there. And then we have an announcement as well. Shirley.
This is the hardest one.
Yeah, this is for sure the hardest one. Shirley, who's been cleaning the cabins here for, 12 years? 11
I think
years?
So.
Yeah, she
said 10 on her note, but I
think
she told
more than
me 12.
That.
I think she told me 12.
I think it's 11 or 12.
12 years.
But Shirley, who you know is just, she's the life, was the lifeblood here, and she has decided to move on. And
retire.
That's what I mean.
Yes.
She's moving on.
She's retiring.
Either way.
She's doing it poorly.
Well, she's looking for, it doesn't matter.
She wants to stay here.
Yeah, I know.
In Montana.
I know. But it's just time for a new chapter in her life, and we wish her the best, and those shoes are going to be really hard to fill, and we know that everybody loved her, and we did too, and we had a very heartfelt goodbye, and for the off chance that you're listening, Shirley, thank you for everything that you did. In that respect, we are also looking for full or part-time housekeeping next year.
We'd have to be full-time or multiples.
Yeah.
Shirley was a unique human. She never had a day off in 12 years.
She didn't ask for them.
Yes. She just worked. And so, but could be a couple, could be husband, wife, could be whatever.
Either way, if you're interested in helping out here and just cleaning cabins for the summer, and it's a cool environment, you can also send us an email, slidein@slidein.com.
And if you're housekeeping, you don't have to fish four nights a week.
No, you don't. You do
but
not.
You can.
We'd probably dig it if you did.
Yeah, if you'd like to, you certainly can.
This is a unique fishing situation where it's the only place I've ever seen where guides get off the river and the staff goes fishing and guides go fishing that night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
After fishing all day, and then it's nothing to have three boats go down the river just on a fishing nights. I mean, four or five times a week.
It truly is the best of times. I mean, like, I was up here 1 year full time, and then I was up here a lot this year, and just after work floats with the fellas and every, fellas, but
there's also a gal that works here, Jordan.
That's why I said I don't want to just say the fellas, Jordan and everyone.
Kick your ass.
Yeah, I'll roll your ass
I know.
Too.
Yes, she'd kick
my ass. Everybody.
I know. I'm not fighting any of that. But yeah, it's a really unique.
Seems very threatened. It does.
It's a really unique place. It's really cool. Getting a bunch of people that are really stoked on fishing that fish together all the time. It's super fun.
Yeah.
Clearly, it's very sticky. I intended on being here for 6 months and then leaving, and I can't. So. It's super cool.
Become the statistic.
Yeah, become the statistic.
Yeah.
But it's cool, yeah. So send resumes in. It's an absolute blast working here. We're excited to get some new blood around.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, let's get into some listener comments and questions and stuff here. First one I want to do was a YouTube comment from Craigaroll 4280. Says, how do you teach someone to cast? I think it was mentioned before that you can't teach your significant other because you try too hard to make them perfect in 5 minutes. So this would be for anyone else. I know I couldn't teach my wife. So that I'd ask this to Johnny to start, given that I'm sure at this point in your guide career, you probably don't have too many brand new, like never ever anglers. But like, what's your little, I've heard Scotties, I've heard Braggs. Like, what's your kind of guide spiel when you get a less experienced individual in the boat?
This is a completely different question. He said significant other.
No, he said, I've talked about not teaching.
Yeah. He said, how do you teach someone to cast?
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I like to try and find a spot on the river rather than the parking lot. But basically, it's hard because when you're trying to teach somebody to cast, you're trying to teach them a dry fly stroke. But generally, when you're first starting with somebody and you're on a guide trip and you want to get them into fish, what you teach them isn't exactly the right stroke for what they're about ready to do. Because right. You want to create a tight loop, but if you're nymphing, you do not want that. The best advice I ever got...
Real quick, just before, for people that might not understand, why don't you want a tight loop with nymphs?
Because you'll get it tangled, because there's more weight, and you're supposed to create basically an aerodynamic loop or tight loop with a dry fly so it can go further. If you do that with weight and two nymphs and everything, you'll tangle it every time.
And a bobber
or whatever. Yeah. When you're on a guide trip, no matter what, like you have to keep somebody's attention. The best way to keep somebody's attention is to prove that, hey, you're going to catch a fish, mm-hmm. right? Even when there's good hopper fishing and everything later in the day, your object is to get them into a few fish and be like, okay, now you know how to nymph. Now we're going to learn how to throw this. But if you're speaking with somebody, my favorite one, actually Skinny taught me this one. And it's my best analogy. There's very few people who haven't held a hammer, except for Kelly, maybe. But
they're scary.
They are. They're heavy. Yeah. So basically, he said the best analogy that worked for him and also that works for me is picture the grip of the rod as a hammer. And we're going to hang a picture. We're just going to hang a picture on the drywall, right? So the wall's right here. And you got the nail in here. How are you going to put the nail in, right? Are you going to take it way far back? No, because you're not going to be able to hit the nail. And most importantly, you never use your elbow with the hammer because the hammer has to go here, right? You're hitting it this way, right? So if you use your elbow, the hammer analogy works. Like, because you can't cast like that. You're creating basically
an arc.
Yeah, a giant arc, which doesn't go anywhere. So you're just going to go from here to here to start, right?
Yep.
And by doing that, you're taking that rod just about back to about 12:30, 1 o'clock, and then you're going forward at about 11, right in there. That works for people. It really does. Like, because almost everybody can see
that.
Pretty
sure you have that backwards, but yeah, whatever.
What's that?
I think it's 11 then to 1:30 or 2, whatever.
Whatever. Yeah.
Just depends on which way you're looking at them from the left or right.
Yeah, I suppose. Sorry. Either way.
10 and 2 is the old days.
From my side, it works.
Yes.
10 and 2 is the old
analogy. Yeah, so that's how I teach them how to cast, and sometimes we're there for 5 minutes, sometimes we're there for 20 minutes, and then the other thing too is once we learn how to cast, we learn how to put the line underneath the finger. That's probably... When you don't do that, and you do, like, I can tell people from the East that fish a lot of slow stuff because they figure eight.
Yeah.
Stuff doesn't work here.
Right.
Like you have to be really, really good to be able to do that.
Just to clarify, that's as soon as you make that cast, you're using your left hand to get your fly line under your trigger finger on your rod hand,
right? Yep, because that's your control point, right? That's how here it's moving very quickly, so you have to be able to strip line in. Mm-hmm. You know, back where you're from, you can kind of do more of a figure eight or whatever. It's just really hard to get away with it. So I work on casting that way, control, and then just stripping in, getting tight, and then letting go, pick it up. Put it down, pick it up, put it down.
Yeah.
That's how I usually start. And that was the question. How do you
teach someone to cast? I think there's...
You can, it's a dissertation. You couldn't do it. He said one tip, right?
I mean, there's so many things to cover. This could be like 15 podcasts, but I think one of the other things,
we'll bring in somebody qualified.
I think,
Bruce,
I think fishing guides are often trying to teach, like they're trying to teach to the point where they can catch fish, right? Mm-hmm. Or you're obviously trying to help someone improve beyond that. But a lot of the time you're teaching a fishing cast versus mm-hmm. somebody who like maybe a more intermediate that's trying to perfect a skill, right?
Well, I'm trying to teach them the right way. I mean, Unfortunately, I hate to say it, but there's a lot of guys that cut corners and they just do the water load. And That's not teaching somebody how to cast because they can go, you can't really do that when you're fishing on your own. It's really important to me that they understand to make one false cast, to carry line, to feel that weight right there, instead of just going, I watched that at boat ramps where some guy's like, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to nymph today. All you have to do is put it over on this side, okay, and then flip it to the other side, then I'll back away, and then if the bobber moves, then you set. That's not teaching him anything.
No, yesterday we were fishing Depew's with Zach, and he said he was fishing with up on the Mo with somebody. They're talking about streamer fishing, and the guys were not really hip to it. But he says it's really quick when you see when a guy's there fishing for a paycheck, or if a guy's guiding for a paycheck, or if he's guiding to be a teacher. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really simple. That's a great analogy to see. That's why we don't have any paycheck guides. Mm-hmm. Because they'll let you water load and plop. But you can't go out day one in a guide situation. And if you have one person, and you said, okay, we'll stop here and we'll practice, or like Scotty likes to do a yard thing in the morning with newbies, and he's just, just to get them the stroke, basically.
Yeah, like, a little timing and tempo. Yeah.
One thing too that
they all really, go too fast.
That's one thing that really helps too is to have some sort of a wrist lock, which Joan Wolf used to have a good one. And no one sells them anymore. Basically, it's a thing that goes around your wrist that has a little,
it's like a plastic piece.
Yeah, not plastic. Piece of leather.
No.
The old days.
Yeah, a piece of leather or any sort of like webbing where you can put the butt of your rod in there.
Oh, gotcha.
So and then you can tighten it. And so that way you can't break your wrist. Right?
Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
There's a perceived action, kind of like in tennis. It looks like they're going super fast, right?
Right.
And you'll see people, it's not like this. It's like this, You say, your best tip is to just slow down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they see it as really fast.
And that was Hunter's tip. I know I shared this in a fly show episode at one point, but I really like Hunter's tip of whenever somebody gets going too fast in the boat, he just tells them, cast in slow motion. Mm-hmm. Like everybody thinks it's this really fast, and then try doing it half speed or quarter speed. It's mm-hmm. like I mentioned this too, but John Jurasek, when what's his name, Brian Gregson, was about to do his long distance cast up at the West Yellowstone Festival, he'd done two casts and they were both good, like I don't know, 106, 107, something like that, and then he goes, all right, this one give me 80%, 80% is further than 100%. And so he just slowed down and they chucked one out to 114. It's that slower, that rod bend.
It's that perception that things are going quick.
Yeah, everybody always overpowers.
And everybody screw up when they do distances. That final forward cast is go, go.
Yeah.
But if you're teaching somebody, they see everybody else casting. They see it going. They see the tip of the rod.
Right.
They see the line and the tip of the rod. They don't see this.
Yes.
Your hand going back like in this slow motion.
So on the teaching front, I've been working with a lot of guys spay casting recently. And I like to teach kind of the general ideas as opposed to specific movements. And I think the reasoning behind that is there's a ton of different ways to cast. Johnny and Kelly cast very differently. Like you guys' form is very different. And then the end product is very similar. Like there's small, somewhat large like differences in the movements you guys are doing. But what happens, what the rod does is the same, right? It's this slow loading and then a gentle push forwards. And you guys have, similar loop shapes and all that. But it's kind of like golf swings, right? There's a ton of different ways to do it. You look at Tiger Woods versus Jim Furyk. They could not be more different. The guys have both won on tour.
From a fishing perspective, accuracy is really all it boils down to. know people who are not very good casters that are more accurate from a fishing perspective than guys that can cast beautifully.
Totally. Yeah. But there's, what I'm saying is there's a lot of ways to be accurate. Like you said, there's guys that have like pretty ugly looking casts, but they're extremely functional, right? Yeah. The fly goes where it's supposed to. So for example, I was just with, Tim Fisher, Guides for Firehole. We've talked about him a little bit, but we were on the Clearwater and he's learning to spay cast. And of course he's the kind of guy that picks it up like that, right? 2 days in, he's throwing a pretty solid looking loop at distance. And we ran into this guy named Andy, really fishy dude. He's a Coast Guard in Washington. And he has competed in the Spayorama, right? He's a distance casting competition guy. And he's a far better caster than I am. But he's trying to teach Tim extremely specific moves, right? This like, you know, chest has to be this way. Like you need to have your rod tip slightly above your hands and at this angle. And like you have to come up and then back. And he's like really hammering the specific move in. And Tim is blowing anchors behind him and like his tempo's all off. And where I differ from that style, and like I'm not saying I'm right. There's just a lot of different ways to do this, but I like to teach the kind of like basic rules that need to be followed. And then you can, like, there's so many different ways to spay cast or single hand cast, but in a spay cast, your rod needs to be rising from halfway through your sweep up into your push, right? It cannot drop in the back. Your line falls on the water. It goes nowhere. It's kind of like creep in a single hand cast, right? There's a lot of stuff you can do with your shoulder, your elbow, your hand, but if you creep, you blow your cast, right? So I like to try to teach those kind of simple things where you can get away with a lot of stuff, but you can't creep. And your rod tip needs to be going in a straight line. It can't be going up or down.
Just basic everything.
We're going down
basic,
this.
Basic everything.
We started with a question for a basic casting tip, and like you said, you could do a dissertation, write books, DVDs.
There's plenty of them.
All of that. Basically, when you're trying... You're just trying to learn how to play the chord of G, right? You're just going to go like this. 1, 2. Then you learn different ways to do it. A lot of it do it by feel, and then when you become unconscious about how you do it, like people, when we have streamer school, we have really good dry fly casters, can't cast a sinking line. They're right here. Because you do have to break your wrist. Mm-hmm. You're not supposed to break your wrist, but you do a sinking line. You do, when you're throwing more than 30, 35 feet of sinking line, if you try and go like this, not bad things happen.
You'll wear it.
Yeah. You come back to 2 o'clock like you're not supposed to. You break your wrist like you're not supposed to.
Yeah.
But the bottom line to all that is, just like golf and spay and skiing and every other thing in the sport in the world, first you master the basics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you jump into a ring, you're not doing spinning roundhouse kicks at somebody. You're going to learn how to throw a left hand, a straight kick, whatever it is. Everything on earth has, you got to have the fundamental, you know, slow them down, get them 2 and 10, whatever it is you're going to do, 11:30 to 1:30, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. Let them get the basics, but you can't make somebody a great cat. Somebody's going to write in and say, oh, that's so bullshit, I did it overnight. Great, you're freaking Jesus.
I've only met two.
It happens. Every fucking thing happens. You ask for a generality, for Christ's sake. Yeah. You just got to teach them one basic stroke back and forth, and then let them cast.
Yeah.
And don't overdo like the guy's saying to Tim. Let the son of a bitch do 1,000 reps. Mm-hmm. You have to do 1,000 reps where you can even think what you're doing.
Learn to throw 25 feet of floating line accurately.
Yeah.
Yes. That's done. It. And be done with it.
Yeah.
And stop the whole double. Shit, I've watched guys trying to teach people double hauls and they're like, they've been out there for 3 minutes.
Yep.
But now we got to work on a double. What? We didn't know what a freaking haul is. Yeah. Let's just get the damn rod tip going back and forth in a straight line.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
there's a bajillion analogies for it.
I'm actually a believer that you shouldn't learn to double haul until you can actually shoot line without a haul. Like you need to master the stroke before you can add in the complicated part of trying to speed your line up more. Because I remember thinking this when we were down in Chile and I was watching you cast, and you know you're throwing it between 35 and 50 feet. And your haul was almost non-existent. Like it almost wasn't there. It's more of a let the line go at the right time than it is a haul. It's just timing it. And that's when I started thinking about it. I'm like, is double hauling overrated? Well, in the wind, you need it. Dry flies, it's really nice. But for streamer fishing, a lot of the time you don't really need it. You've got enough weight in your system. And if you can load your rod, It's just a forward stroke and let go, and you can shoot a ton of line.
If you watch Howard or Bruce or either Ray or John, any of these guys, you don't see this.
Yeah, they're not doing Bruce. This while they're fishing.
You watch, it's all timing, and you accelerate. Once the line is perfectly straight, that 6 inches of acceleration is loading that rod up so big. And I mean, watch O'Keefe.
Yeah,
I can't see him hauling.
No, it's microscopic.
Stupid,
yeah,
right.
It's more about a time release.
I think Bruce is worse. I don't even know if his hand moves, and it's. But that's all later in the world.
Yeah,
1,000 reps, and then look at it and go, yeah, do another 1,000.
Yeah.
What is that shit with what's his name? Pain on, pain off.
Wax on, wax off. Whatever. Wax on, wax off.
You know, do the freaking house, and when you're done, we'll change it and go the other direction.
Yep.
Okay.
The horse is dead. Say on that?
No. They get to learn how to throw. You know, start there, know what you do is right, and then learn how to cast 25 feet of floating line accurately, and that'll take you a long way.
Most of the way.
A long way.
Did he leave us again?
I think the other thing, just to briefly mention, which I'm sure some people know this, I'm sure some people have heard us say something like this, but I just wanted to clarify. We talked a little bit about the nymph cast. We talked about the streamer cast. Not necessarily every fly when you're streamer fishing, but like nymphing, dry fly, streamer, it's all a very different cast. Like they are very, very different. And then you go from I think the distance you're throwing changes your cast drastically too. Once you're getting into the kind of more advanced levels, right? Like if I'm only throwing it 15 feet, my rod movement is, 11:45 to 12:15. I mean, it's a very, maybe not that short.
In the beginning, you shouldn't change much. Things shouldn't. Yeah, that perception of getting longer.
In the advanced world. But like.
Yeah, let's not go there.
As you go. Well, some people might care. as you cast longer, your stroke needs to elongate with it.
Sure. And the guy that's trying to figure out how to fucking cast right now says, what's elongate mean? You take a pill for that?
Maybe he knows words. He might know words better than you do.
I'm sure they do.
All right, let's jump into...
It would be interesting when we do one of the big podcasts once we get the studio going.
Yeah.
And we bring in Howard, Bruce, Tim, and John, and the superstar casters, and Brian, and have five guys talk.
Yeah.
I bet you if you could isolate each one, every tip will be virtually exactly the same. They'll all have a different way of doing it, just like different swing coaches on golf. But the physics of it all will be exactly the same on rod load.
Totally. Yeah.
No matter what it is.
Yeah. And there's a lot of different ways to get there. But at the end of the day, there's going to be.
But it would be a blast to do it. Or to have a, when we do the grand opening for the new shop, to have a panel.
Yeah.
I mean,
no, that'd
film,
be cool.
Film the panel.
Yeah.
And see, and get the five best guys in the world and say, and that 14-year-old girl that beat everybody's ass.
Right. do we have any idea, roughly when that's going to be?
August next year sometime.
Okay. Yeah, we're remodeling the North Slide. It's going to be giant, possibly the biggest. And we're going to do a big party. So it would be great to see a bunch of our listeners out there.
Yeah. And then, but it would be fun to get the, or it's just like, I've been on panels where you do fly tying things, like the same thing. And There's a micro differences between guys tie one way or another. Like maybe you put collar on different, or you stem your hackles differently, whatever it is, how you post your hackles. I mean, and whatever it is, but in the long run, there's not much difference between anybody. You know, there's very few people that tie upside down and backwards, although it does happen.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's people that go completely backwards and stuff, and their flies are spectacular. But the same with the casting thing. Like you're saying, who's got the worst stroke in all of golf?
Probably Matt Wolf, either him or Jim Furyk, historically.
You said Furyk before.
Yeah. He's an awful-looking stroke, and yet here's the similarity I'm getting at, right? His backswing, Matt Wolf's the same. The backswing is atrocious, right? And their hand action's really weird, foot action's goofy, and yet they all get into what's called the slot. And that is, when the club is 2.5 feet from impact, almost parallel with the ground, their hands are all in the exact same position. Now, they got there very different ways, but they're all there. And it's the same thing, Johnny, you have a slightly more arm-raised motion in your cast. But if you watch, if you take stills of it your hand is here when that rod is bent over. And like the rod tip angles, they're all the exact same as Kelly or whoever else, right? But yep. there's slightly different ways of getting there. I'm sure
it's like Happy Gilmore.
See, yeah, I mean like Jerry, right?
The golf guy.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of it's just like, I mean, I never had a casting instructor or never had anybody comment on my cast. I just went fishing. And if I wasn't able to do something, I tried to figure out ways to make it happen. So it's all self-taught.
You just watch people and pick
go
it up.
Fishing. Yeah.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of ways to skin the proverbial cat. All right, let's get into some more user stuff or listener stuff. This question comes from Parker Vance. It says, hi, Braden and Kelly and Johnny. I'm a listener to your podcast and a Euronympher. While I can understand the sentiment that Euronymphing is probably the easiest target for fly fishermen to pick on, because I will agree it's not really fly fishing and it catches more fish than any of the other style of fishing, I also think it's a great vehicle for creating great trout anglers. It can break a lot of bad habits that you hear Kelly bitch about on the podcast. By the way, I should have mentioned the subject of this email is an argument for soulless Euronymphers creating a more complete fly fisherman. So he continues. He says, first, you always hear Kelly talk about get close to the fish and hunt your fly. I feel like the Euro guys have to do this simply because they're always trying to stay tight to the flies, don't want to have a lot of line out, so they are required to get close to stalk their fish. This can help people with the idea that you don't need to bomb your flies 50 feet to hit the far bank. You can fish all the spots close to you to make sure you aren't stepping on fish, and then stalk your fish by wading fishing into a position where you can feed that fish. And if you're nymphing, you can get a good understanding of how close you can get to fish without putting them down or spooking them. Second is that any Euro guys worth their salt, or that is worth their salt, should be tying their own flies. When it comes to just about every other kind of fly fishing, presentation of the fly matters way more than the pattern. I'd be willing to bet my engineering salary that I could have every pattern tied personally by Kelly, and Kelly could grab a handful of flies from the bin in the shop, and in a day of dry fly fishing, he would outfish me. So that's Parker using Kelly's flies, Kelly using store flies. On the other hand, while the patterns also don't really matter in Euronymphing, if you want to fish it right, you have to be fishing the right weight to get the fly to fish. Because of that, a good Euronympher will have the same bead head nymph in the same size with three different weights so they can get the same pattern to fish in different water types. This is the reason why I started tying flies, and like Kelly himself said, any great fly fisherman ties his own flies. So if you want to be a good Euronympher, you need to sit down at the vise and build your boxes so that you have every pattern you want in different weights you want so you can get the presentation right in all different places fish will hold. That, in my opinion, lays a foundation for creating a great fly fisherman. Slidein.com, by the way, for all those beads and stuff. Third is simply that you catch a lot of fish. I don't know any human being in the world who doesn't get a little excited when they catch their first fish of the day. The monkey brain in all of us want to catch...
I loved that.
Yeah. The monkey brain in all of us want to at least catch a fish whenever we go out. Because of that, the idea of Euronymphing where you can put 20-plus fish in the net means that even beginners who don't have an insatiable fishing bug up their ass will want to go out and spend all day on the water. Then the more you do it, the more potential there is for the individual getting that bug to spend time on the water. If there's one thing that is an absolute must for creating great anglers, it is spending time on the water. To sum it all up, I think Euronymphing can create great anglers because the amount of fish you catch motivates people to get out on the water. Its catch rate can help an individual pattern where fish hold in the water. It helps a person understand how close to fish you can get without spooking. It requires fishermen to tie flies so that they can get their flies to where they want them in the water. All of those things, in my opinion, are foundational skills and lessons that need to be learned by any good angler, and Euronymphing can teach them quicker than any other type of fly fishing. I'd love to hear Kelly's opinion on this and see if he agrees or disagrees with my opinions. Thanks, Parker. P.S. I'm a 25-year-old living in State College.
25. I was going to say, how old is he?
Yeah, State College, Pennsylvania. He fishes Spring Creek and Penns Creek.
Yeah, those are tough rivers.
He also learned to fly fish at 16, fishing dry flies, got hooked on streamer fishing, and then picked up the Euro rod. He's not a fly fishing elitist. I will fish for any fish as long as I find it fun. I have half a dozen heathen gear rods for bass and muskie.
Congratulations.
And I'm currently trying my hand at sight fishing for carp. Not that all that really matters. I want to make the point that I just like to fish.
It's a big one.
That was a lot of reading for Braden.
Yeah, I told you not to do it all.
Yeah,
well, I read that this morning, and I mean, as much as I love to pick on the Euro guys, just because they're thin-skinned usually, I 100% agreed with everything he said. And I've said it in many, 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 a dozen of these things I've said. I do it. If you go back in time, way back, some of my first tight line memories about Euro style fishing was on the Platte River in 1968 when the guys from mostly New York, I saw that, and everybody fished sponge. And they used, that was the first blue fluorescing DuPont Stren. And they all used the same rod, 9.5 foot, 8 weight Fenwick. And they used pen reels, blue line, sponge dipped in anise oil. Smelled like a damn candy factory in the freaking river because it's that licorice smell. Mm-hmm. And then they all did the same and they all tight lined, right? That morphs into about the same time as when Joe Humphrey starts tight lining, blah, blah, blah. Everybody, and then if you really want to see it bastardized, go to Michigan during this, when we started doing it, the slinky rigs, and before that, just the lead rigs, and you're tight lining, you're tight lining. And that was all. It was a gateway drug to just catching fish, right? We were snagging 90% of those fish. We're zipping them. It wasn't that if they would set their freaking rod up straight, they wouldn't have done it, but they're all, you know, slashing downstream. Regardless of that, then you go into the gateway thing of this whole Euro thing. I completely agree with everything he said. You know, stalk more, hunt more, stalk more, hope less.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, hunt the damn thing, right? Get in there. And so when you do Euro nymph, you do see how close you're on your fish, and they don't move. Now, there's a caveat there that's not a dry fly. You don't get to walk up on a dry fly feeder, right? So there's a difference between the two of them. But everything he said is so true, because everybody, like Johnny, started his thing with the guiding, with the casting. What do? You go out, you teach him how to cast a nymph, you get the rod bent.
Yep.
You put some fun into the game. And that, in my opinion, is where... When people were telling me that when the streamers started thing, the book started going, and how many people just flocked into it because it wasn't any more boring. Dry fly fishing in the old days was pretty damn boring. A lot of sitting and watching, a lot of pontificating, rather it was time. And, you know, in some places in Europe, you still got a ghillie that tells you when it's proper to throw to a dry fly to a fish, and you can't fish it until. Well, that shit was making fly fishing pretty damn boring.
It requires a lot of patience.
Well, in the East, also, there's not a lot of blind casting with dry flies. It's out here, you can do it, but out there.
Well, and even here, you know, if you were doing it in old school, you would wait to see if the fish was doing it. But anyway, and then the streamer thing was very active, right? And that's when people are saying, well, I'm personally ruining the whole freaking sport. Well, all of these are gateway drugs to getting back to, because that's what we've talked to. I don't know what podcast we did where I was talking about people coming to me, not so much this year, but the year before, and saying they wanted to get into, they've been Euro nymphing for 4 or 5 years, and now they want to try that dry fly shit or stuff or whatever they said, And I was like, you know. But everything he said, learning to catch fish, your rod's bent, you get going into it, and then you want to move on. It's a gateway drug.
I didn't throw dries except for caddis when I first got here for the first 2 years. It's sort of like even Dahlberg said, what do I do when I go to an area where I know there's tons of fish? I fish bait. I want to know where they live. Yeah. Right? Then I go back and I do artificial. It's the same thing here. Like I think that you have to have an idea of the potential of a place. And there is no better way to do that, whether you're nymphing or you're nymphing. I mean, you do have to get closer from a Euro standpoint, but it ain't like you're fishing much more than 15 feet of line with a regular nymph rig anyway.
If you're doing it right,
there's a difference between catching a couple fish in a run and then going back into a run and catching 50. Yeah. And now you're like, oh my God, I had no idea how many fish were there. Then you know. Okay, mm-hmm. So if I put that dry fly over, and I know that there's potential of like 20 or 30 fish in that run, I don't get eaten, I should probably change.
Kind of like we talked about Pope and Rick and the guys who would sit on, you would say you'd see them in the morning and they wouldn't make it a mile down the river, and we've gone 7.
Yeah.
And they're fishing and they're catching, but they're working it out. They're working, they're dry fly guys, right? They're working a run.
Yeah,
and so once you get that many fish are there that you can't see them.
Yeah.
but that gives you that confidence to fish them. And by the way, even as I love to pick on the Euro guys, because look at this, we got like 5 years of stuff out of this. And it's like, and I do Euro now, but if you look at the bastardization of nymph fishing with a bobber and lead, it was more horrific to the purists than the Euro nymphy was.
Yeah.
I mean, when we started throwing indicators online, and actual bobbers, right?
Bobbers, yes.
When we did that, it was worse than the Euro guys. I mean, people talked much worse about
Bants.
Bants. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I mean,
worst thing that ever happened to fly fishing was the strike indicator.
Yeah.
Is what he always
said. I mean, if you take, you go back to the 80s, and you take the 60s, 70s anglers, when the 80s show up and this bobber thing shows up, indicators, because we're higher than bait fishermen, right?
And it's so indicative of being a bobber.
Yes. And so that was just so as good. Big. And the Euro thing is like, I read that this morning. I read it twice. It was like, it was really well put. It's probably why he's an engineer. But everything, and by the way, I have a picture I'm going to show that I took of, I don't remember whose box this was, but he was talking about having to have, we'll take a picture of this and show it. Because
yeah,
I took this, it's the first guy I ever see do that. Like, it's all his flies are on there. We'll show it in a second.
I'll send it to myself here.
And it's a, they're all, which means this cat's really dialed in, right? You know, and that's, you know, that's one of the arts of learning the Euro nymph is you know what a 3-0 will do. And 3-0 with a 2 or a 1-5 above it. You know what your sink rates are. You get all that stuff, and it rolls in. And there's a lot of technicalities to Euro nymphing. Nobody, we just pick on it because it was easy, low-hanging fruit, right?
Yeah.
And everybody got so offended. But if you look at all the shit, you can go back and see arguments between Skuse and Helford and Julian Burns at Barnes. I mean, and see these people saying, oh, no, that's not fishing. They weren't doing this. This has been going on since. I just read a thing in Trout 2 about the first reference possibly to dry fly fishing was in 250 A.D. Are you shitting me? Right? They were arguing about shit back then. You know, is that, well, that's not really proper dry fly fishing. You know, it was like, my God, we're never going to stop. It keeps it interesting. But I loved everything he said. I really did. Who cares?
And the fact that he's being very nice, even if you're not very good. What do they always say? It's like 91.8% of the fish dies underwater. It's 99.9.
And plus. Remember I did the fact.
So, yeah, if Kelly took whatever dry fly out there and they're not eating him, and you're, even if you've got only a couple years and you're nymphing, you're probably going to catch more than him.
That's just, no matter what.
Yeah. You don't have to be that good.
If they're not
anyway.
Up, it's really hard
we
to
gave,
get them
we
up.
We gave fish, Brad did it, our accountant. Did
it's 99.9.
Yeah, we gave him 100 eats in a hatch.
Yeah.
100 heads up, which would be a lot of eats. That's a lot of eats. But I think we gave it 100, I don't remember, and broke it down through the day.
Yeah.
And we gave it, I think, 2.5 seconds per rise.
Yeah.
Something like that. And it was like nothing. But there's always one that wants to put their heads up. But I think that was a big thing, my generation coming out of, as the selective trout thing started and we started really exacting dry flies, and you started seeing people going out and they're fishing dry. Before, you were just throwing a thing out there, right? And it was, but you did it with a hatch or without a hatch. Well, it's then you better be there for the casting. Right, because the fishing, the catching, isn't going to be as. Now we're talking about wild trout too. We're not talking about stocker poppers and shit like that that have a bigger tendency to go and play on the surface. But
well, let's break it down one very easily. There's only two ways to tell how many fish are in a particular run or a particular river. One is when you have a blanket hatch and everything's eating, or when it's not happening, which is the other 99.9% of the time is. To go find out how many are down below.
Mm-hmm.
And once you catalog that information, like there's tons of runs in this river, which is just a machine as far as like, there's some fish runs that there's only a couple of fish in there and it looks so good. Mm-hmm. The only way you're gonna know that is by getting down to their level and trying. And there's little buckets that there you can catch 30 or 40 fish in there and there's not even enough room where you're saying, how are there that many fish in there? The only way you get to know that is by nymphing. Right.
Where's the third way to find out? Kelly, didn't you snorkel the fast water up here?
Yeah, I was there. I was fishing the boat ramp. And I go, what are you doing there, Pilgrim? Oh, I'm going to go snorkel the fast water on the rock wall. And yeah, I was fishing and he came down bloodied and just torn apart.
Didn't
and
work
just
so
barely well. Breathing and it's got blood dripping off of his knees and his elbows. And he's like breathing like he just ran a triathlon. I'm like, how'd that work out for you? What'd you see? Just bubbles. I just got one thing to say. This ain't Michigan.
I saw the two fishes I washed up on the boat launch. Yeah. I pushed two. They're like, woo! Yeah.
So yeah, there is that. Bubbles. I mean, but there's certain rivers where it's not conducive as much to nymphing. I mean, there's some of your rivers back home that aren't good. You know,
they're much better with an indicator.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you can get to it, but. So like, there is another way. You can have the cameras and go underwater too. But
yeah.
And we used to do that when Gene and I would film out here. And you'd see Gene, he'd have the, guess what, he had a, you know, you're in the, whatever those goggle things are, and you're looking.
The hood.
It's very weird because you're like, you don't want to walk because you're looking through. Yeah. It's a mind, it screws with you, right? And you'd see Gene go, he'd put.
Yeah. They're everywhere.
He says, how come you're not catching these? Yeah. There'd be like 30 fish in this pool. And you go like that and you go through and they're just not.
No, I say amen. Like especially, and I asked, how old is he? Like 25. when you're younger, you want that. That's my mindset is like, catch them all. You know, I want to catch them all. I want to try and do it. I want to dissect everything.
Everybody does when they start.
Yeah, that's what
everybody
I mean.
Everybody, I don't give a what, shit. Now you get these guys my age who have been doing it for their whole life, and they're like, you know, was my ass got my bra. And it's like, you're the same damn guy, go out, probably had a freaking night crawler in your box, in your fly vest with you. People want to catch fish.
Yeah.
And we all make, and it's, that was that thing, we wrote an article, there's three or four of us wrote, it started out with John Gierak and I, about called The Generation Gap. And I forget, there's other guys in it too, but started out when we were all drunk and arguing with this one guy in a bar one night when Randolph was with us. So we wrote, or not Randolph, but editor of, might have been Dave. But at any rate, it was, and we did this, and it was right in the beginning of the streamer stuff, right? And we did this generation gap, and they show Sparse Gray Hackle with his tweed jacket and hat, his ascot and his pipe, and he looks like he's 1,000 years old. And they show some kid in surfer shorts with a beer tucked in his pocket, running up the up the river like wide open, right? Remember that?
Yep, I remember that.
And it was just the difference. People, we've changed as a society. We've completely changed. But the bottom line's the same. We all want to catch fish.
Yeah.
It's like last week when we were talking about limiting, you know, self-regulating yourself on catching fish. Good
we're
luck.
Not going back there.
Yeah, just good luck. Who's going to do it? You're going to go catch fish, right? At a certain point, yeah, you can do it. But no one's starting. Nobody would be in this sport if you said, okay, you get to catch one fish, now you got to go home.
Yeah.
Go meditate.
Right.
Yes.
It all goes back to just when you get to a certain point where you figure out you can catch them all, the law of diminishing returns is different for each person.
Yeah.
Okay? I know, like, if I get to a spot and I hit six fish in a row, I'm not going to do what I did 10 years ago, which is keep catching them. Mm-hmm. I'm probably going to go, okay, well, I figured that out. I'm going to go to the next spot. And people are like, why are you leaving? Why don't I know what's going to happen? I figured it out. I'm going to go catch another 10. I don't need to. Now, if I knew that this particular area all had 10-pound fish, then maybe I would try and do that. But like, I'm over
it. For a while.
And some people never get over it. There's dudes that I know that would be like, if I don't take, you know, 50 fish, it's not a good day. And it's like, okay, man, well, I don't like lose track after three.
Yeah,
I'm good. I'm just happy being out there and fishing. And you get to a point where, do you want to catch a lot? Do you want to catch the one? What do you want to do? Great. As long as you're not impeding on anybody else's happiness, have at it.
Why'd you just take your fly off? Well, we know they're eating this fly.
Well, I hate that one. Streamer fishing's different. Streamer fishing's different.
Yes, Johnny doesn't like when I do that.
I don't mind when we're fishing on our own. I mind if we're like, I put in all the work and we're doing it on the camera. More on that later. But that bothers me. Because streamer fishing, it's like, it could be on a window. It could be nymphing. You know, if you're good and you know the river, you can catch a ton of fish. So yeah, I think it's really important. It teaches people how to identify where certain runs are. And especially when you get to certain rivers, you know, there are some places that look really good that don't have as many fish. And so it's very valuable. And it teaches you next time you go dry fly fishing or streamer fishing, the areas that you should be like, I passed a lot of fish. I should probably switch it up. So
I think Howard had a real good opinion on that, where he just said they all take certain skill sets and do them all. You know, and that's what I think is happening right now. You're seeing people. It's kind of like this new spay thing. Everybody wants to go throw spay flies, right? All of a sudden, spay started that. Where it's not like it's a new deal, but suddenly it's that. Somebody just people like I was thinking about Chris when he's all those podcasts he's listening to. He's bringing up guys I haven't heard of in 30 years, and he's like he's talking to him
he's
right
so
now.
He's so locked in. He's got all the books. He's listening to every podcast.
But you know, there'll be another hula hoop, right? It's just like people. So it's a great gateway, and it just but really from a retail perspective, you should not be fighting this. I mean, it's more toys. It's good for the industry. It puts more people up, and then there's always that thing about more people, but that's just such a shitty attitude. You know, you can, and I can just hear people saying, "Oh, it's because you're, you know, capitalist bastard, you're a retailer." Yeah, well, that's partly true too, but a bigger, more people, more voice. You know, when people want to start all this shit with the crazies and the Yellowstone Club and wanting to block rivers and all this shit, well, if there's not a whole bunch of us arguing for it, so the more the merrier, even though it pisses you off that you can't fish the same fucking hole you fished for 30 years, maybe if you get off that hole, you'd find a better one.
It was either Flip or Lefty that was talking about it, but basically you need to bring more people into the sport. And just like you said, it's more voices and it's more conservation. It's more people that care about kind of sustaining the resource.
Right? Yeah, I mean, I used to tell this same story about BASS, and people would always say to me, "What do you want this turn into, bass fishing?" I said, "Do you have any idea how much money BASS as an entity puts into natural resources? I mean, like 1,000 times what we do. Well, they're 1,000 times bigger, but I mean, but it all ends up being good."
Yeah. Yeah.
That horse is dead.
Must get leveled. I also, nobody will care about this, but I just wanted to shout out Parker. He laid out a very traditional 5-paragraph argument here where he told us what he was going to tell us. His middle 3 paragraphs were telling us what he's telling us, and his 4th or 5th paragraph is telling us what he told us. It's a very succinct, well laid out argument.
Yeah, I know.
And I just got to give him some credit for that.
Well, yes, Parker.
And it was, he didn't use big words either, which was good for me. So thanks for writing in, Parker. All right, let's wrap this one up. Band of the week. John, being our guest.
Have you guys ever even, I mean, it's been brought up.
Are you going to say Disco Biscuits?
No. Okay. And that's Sammy Biscuits, first of all. But I don't really think you've ever said Grateful Dead.
No.
Not on this podcast.
I'm going with Grateful Dead.
Such a piece of shit.
Greatest American band
of all time.
Greatest American band of all time. And I'm happy 1-year anniversary.
We have brought up the Grateful Dead.
For the record, I'm on John's side. I've done Jerry Garcia before and a number of his other bands.
All right, what do you got?
Yeah, we know. Huh?
Yeah. Well, I was you know, how many bands have done more than tours than the Grateful Dead and all everything? A lot, actually. You know, the number one band in the United States for number of shows? Blue Oyster Cult, which is crazy. It's like 4,000 shows. But I will tell you this. There's a lot of Dead cover bands, and there will be forever. You don't see a lot of
Blue Oyster Cult.
No, cover bands. I was going to say like Cerulean Clam Religion or something like that.
I like Blue Oyster Cult.
I do too.
Clam Religion.
I don't know my band this week.
Anyway,
Grateful Dead. It sounds like an actual cult.
It could be. All right, what do you got?
I'm going to go with Blue Oyster.
Sweet.
Yeah, I liked them. But that's not who I was. That's good because I'm running out, so I keep writing them down.
You went number one. Huh? You went right to the top.
I only know Blue Oyster from the SNL Will Ferrell skit, the More Cowbell one.
Yeah, that's some good stuff.
That's when I first found out about Blue Oyster Cult.
Do they have more than one
hit
song? Most people just know Don't Fear the Reaper.
That's the only one I know.
I had a handful of songs that really made it big, but.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I wasn't a big fan of that one either. So.
I'm not prepared. I don't remember. I'm going to go with...
Don't go with one of them trashy Seattle bands.
What does that mean? The grunge?
Yes. He did it last week.
I saw a small Soundgarden.
Who did I go with last week?
I don't know. You were just talking about it. It was 2 weeks ago. He brought up somebody's name, and I'm like that chain gal or whatever. Alice Chain or whatever.
Alice in Chains? Yeah, that gal.
Alice's Chain.
That gal.
Alice's Chain Wallet.
Yeah,
a new cover band.
I think I said it before, but I've been listening to a lot of Sierra Ferrell recently, so I'll go Sierra Ferrell.
I don't recall that.
She rocks.
She's really good.
Yeah.
I don't remember that. Good.
She's wild.
That was fun.
See you next week.
Hope you liked it. Hope it helps you out.